Earth, sky.
We are up against problems that all humankind are facing at the same time. We're up against some biological obstacles, and we have great tools to be able to overcome those biological obstacles, but we have to start a different conversation. And to ignore the biological limits of the human organism is a very dangerous place to be.
You are listening to author Rebecca Costa, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Costa has written a book called The Watchman's Rattle, Thinking Our Way Out of Extinction, with a foreword by Harvard biologist E.O. Wilson. Costa spoke more with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar.
Ms. Costa, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Thank you.
Now, what is the watchman's rattle that you write about in your book?
In earlier times, the first police forces that humans had were called watchmen, and they didn't carry any arms with them or weapons. They had these large rattles that would make a clacking sound in the middle of the night to alert the citizens to danger, and it was really a summons for help. And so I wrote this book as a summons for help for those who are deeply concerned about problems that we have not solved for many generations to come to the aid of the sound of the watchman's rattle.
So what kind of problems are you talking about here?
Well, I don't think it comes as any surprise to people that the same problems have been hanging around for many, many generations, and they're exponentially growing in terms of their size and their peril. If we made a list of those problems, they'd be everything from deteriorating education to problems with our borders, terrorism, climate change, the global recession right now. We seem to be in some kind of gridlock where we just, despite all our technology and all our knowledge, don't seem to be able to get on top of these problems. The book is really divided into three sections. The first third is to look at earlier civilizations and see if there's any pattern of human behavior that occurred long before the actual incidents that's responsible for their collapse. In other words, I don't want to argue with historians whether the Mayans collapsed because of drought or warfare or pandemic virus. I don't think to the Mayans whose society fell apart it mattered. But what I was curious about was, were there ordinary Mayan citizens walking around saying, you know, our government doesn't seem to be able to solve the drought problem, and it seems to be getting worse one generation after another. And in fact, what I did discover was there were two early signs that a civilization was going into collapse. First, they became gridlocked and unable to solve their problems as their problems migrated from one generation to another, despite knowing those problems might do them in. They think of them as airplanes all stacking up in the sky, trying to land on the same runway. Eventually, one's going to get you. And the second symptom was that the worse their situation got, the more they began to rely on beliefs as their way out, as opposed to rational methods that were fact-based and empirically based.
Yeah, I was hoping you might give us an example from The Watchman's Rattle of how science can be applied to solving a daunting problem that's been around for a while. Does something come to mind?
Well, let's use the definition of complexity that comes out of Harvard University. A complex environment is one in which the number of wrong choices is growing exponentially relative to the number of right choices. So when we're faced with a complex problem, the odds are stacking against us that we'll call the solution right. In an environment like that, we have to go look for models that are related to high failure rates. And the model I use in the book is the venture capital model. Many people don't know that venture capitalists are actually experts at failure, not experts at success. What I mean by that is for every 100 companies they invest in, they expect 90, 85 or 90 of them to not do well or fail completely. But in spite of those odds, they're able to be tremendously successful because those companies that succeed, the successes far dwarf and overwhelm the failures. So because of that, they're able to have a high failure rate model that's highly profitable and successful. In that same way, when we face a problem such as the Gulf oil spill, where it's chaotic and we need to take action right away, no amount of due diligence is going to improve our odds of calling the right solution. In fact, we called the wrong solution. At first, we dropped a concrete box on the hole, and then we waited 30 days and discovered that didn't work. And then we went to solution number two, which was to drill through the side and relieve some of the pressure. And that didn't work. And, you know, 60, 90 days out, we finally stumbled upon the static kill method. That trial and error is a form of problem solving, which we use to find lost luggage at the airport, doesn't work when we're dealing with a highly chaotic and dynamic model that's very, very complex. And so what we need to do is to deploy models like venture capital, where we hit it with everything. We should have gone after that problem in the Gulf oil spill with 50, 100 solutions and expected that maybe 80 or 90% of them would have failed. But the 10% that would have succeeded would have plugged the hole much more quickly than doing this through trial and error and allowing the clock to run out.
Yeah, and I was hoping you, Ms. Costa, you could tell us more about breakthroughs, which form a good part of your book, in talking about what goes on in the brain in breakthroughs and why that's important to the situation that everybody finds themselves in today.
When you think about it, we're the first civilization since man has walked the planet that's able to put a skull cap on a human being and watch what their brain is doing when they reach a complex problem that exceeds their capability. So we can watch our brains try to use left side problem thinking, which is very deconstructive. We start out with lots of solutions and we keep narrowing them down like a funnel till we get to one or two and then we pick one. Then we have the right side of the brain that uses more of a synthesis process. We use lots of clues and we connect the clues together to come up with a solution. But every now and again, when we hit a complex problem that's above the pay grade of left brain deconstructive thinking and right brain synthetic thinking, what we find is a little portion of the brain called the ASTG lights up like a Christmas tree. And we have a breakthrough, or what neuroscientists are calling an aha moment. And if you think about aha moments are legendary. They're the thing of folklore. We talk about an apple hitting Newton in the head, and suddenly he says, aha, okay, there's gravity. That explains a lot. Same with Archimedes when he got into the bathtub and the water spilled over the edges and he discovered displacement theory. So we know that this exists, but for some reason we thought it was sort of random and couldn't be controlled. And now what neuroscientists have recently discovered, and I'm only talking about in the last few years, I wish I could have written more about it in my book, is that all people have the ability to use insight to solve highly complex dynamic problems, and that insight seems to search through all the content in our brain and only connect those pieces of information that are relevant to solving the problem, and does it instantaneously. It's a fascinating process. And the most wonderful thing about the discovery is it seems to be a third form of powerful problem solving, ideally suited to complex problems.
You've been listening to Rebecca Costa, author of The Watchman's Rattle. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.